You are listening to WPVMLP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. After some patchy fog, expect a mix of sun and clouds today, with showers and thunderstorms becoming more widespread this afternoon. Highs reach the mid-80s. Tonight turns partly cloudy after a few evening storms, with patchy fog developing overnight and lows in the middle 60s. Saturday looks much wetter, with dense fog possible to start the day, followed by periods of showers and storms. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. I'm sitting in Western North Carolina at Lake Eden at my desk I use when I'm in the Asheville area. I just arrived yesterday from a cross-country trip from Taos, New Mexico. I left very early in the morning, Taos time, drove for a couple of days to visit my good friend Walter Parks and his wife Margot Parks in Webster Groves, Missouri, which is a suburb of St. Louis. And there, Walter and I did some visiting, some working, some eating, some philosophizing, sitting on the porch, that sort of thing. Warm summer days in St. Louis, August days. And yesterday, I got up very early, 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 a.m. Everything happens at 4 a.m., some people say. And loaded my car, drove east, headed out of St. Louis across the mighty Mississippi River, going through Illinois, down through Kentucky, and on into Tennessee. And one of the things I've always wanted to do, I've always wanted to do a show, a radio show, of me just driving along, thinking the thoughts I'm thinking, and recording the thoughts as I think them, or as I speak them after I've thought them. So that's what I did yesterday. And I started the recording somewhere near Tennessee, moving into Nashville, and then heading on over to Asheville. So what you're going to hear are my thoughts and a bit of my road thinking. Now, one of the reasons why I like to do this and enjoy this kind of approach is because I can do it thanks to community radio, WPVM-FM in Asheville, managed by Devine Dial, and Robin Collier, Mike Tilley, managing KCEI-FM in Taos, New Mexico, Cultural Energy Radio. I bumped into Robin Collier outside of Sid's Food Store in Taos. He sets up his table and raises funds for his radio station. And Robin and Mike have been at this for years. I've known these guys for, I don't know, I think maybe I met them in 1997. So I've had more than one occasion to be on the Cultural Energy Radio station. And Robin broadcast up into, or Cultural Energy Radio broadcast up into Colorado. Robin was telling me that he has hopes of putting up a grand tower on top of a mountain. He has access. He has the resources. I have no doubt that he will do it. He's always raising money. So if you pass by him at SIDS, you can make a donation to the tower. The rising up of the voices out of the ground. Anyway, I have community radio to thank for allowing me to put these shows together and broadcast them first over the weekend, and then I put them on a platform, and then they become a podcast. The pod, or the radio, the broad, all of these casts, we're casting our lines out into the great sea, hoping to catch something. Who knows what it is? But what I've caught now, and what I'd like to share with you, are all of the musings I had yesterday as I was driving across America, or at least a little bit of America. So here you go, sit back, and let's just begin with my road reflections. Off we go.
Interstate 64, 50 miles, North of Nashville, Tennessee, gas prices unleaded $3.35 a gallon. I'm driving from St. Louis after having driven across to St. Louis a couple of days ago from Taos, New Mexico. I've made that trip many, many times, either going across I-40 through Oklahoma, Arkansas, and when my good friend Walter Parks moved to St. Louis with his wife, Margot, to be near her family, I started making a little jag north through St. Louis on my way to Asheville to see Walter. So I've been doing this trip a lot, and I'm on I-64, as I said, headed south. It's summer. And one of the things I'd like to do during this time together is just record the road thoughts. And one of the reasons I've always been drawn to the road, the highway, I call it the Great American Highway, which is, have driven in other countries over the years, but mostly the miles I've laid down have been on the interstates, sometimes the two-lane roads. And I've always laid these miles down, not because I was a tourist, but because I was trying to get somewhere to do some kind of work or visit somebody. I've seldom taken more tourist-inclined road trips. Now, that's on me. I sometimes think I would be really well served to stop along the way, look at the grass like I'm doing now, but I'm not stopping and I'm just driving along. Or visit a little town somewhere and sit in the cafe in the little town. Would I learn more in the cafe in the little town than I would in a big city? This I don't know. But one of the things about traveling on the road, it's predictable. You know what speed you have to stay relatively within. Right now, on this stretch of road from St. Louis headed down to Nashville and then on over to Asheville by way of Knoxville and the Pigeon River Gorge, I'm noticing a tremendous amount of construction, road construction everywhere. I don't know where the motivation or the money is coming from for this. I suspect it may be part of the developmental money that the Biden administration put into play a couple of years ago. And so I'm dealing with the varying speeds and the rhythm of the road, the FedEx trucks passing by, some motorcycles over to my left. Lots of semi-trucks, long haulers, they call them, the long haul trucks. Motorcycles have always fascinated me. I used to ride motorcycles when I was younger, but I don't do it much now. So I drive my car instead, my Toyota Corolla, my brown Toyota Corolla, four-door sedan, boring as a post. Probably the most boring car in the world to look at. And maybe to drive as well. One of the things I like about my Toyota Corolla, I like it because it's invisible. I'm driving down the road now. Nobody notices my car. Nobody thinks, oh my gosh, what an outstanding car that fellow owns. It's just a brown, smudgy Toyota Corolla. And when I say smudgy, I'm using that as a metaphor. I actually do keep the car clean. I find that I have a great satisfaction in that invisibility. And that's one reason why I don't have bumper stickers on the car. I think I'm private, really. And I don't have tattoos. I don't have anything against a tattoo. I know a lot of people, most of my friends, in fact, have a few tattoos. And for good reason, symbols. Ways of communicating who they are and how they think. For me, I have never had tattoos, not because I didn't want one so much, but it was because welcome to Tennessee, the volunteer state, crossing over the state line right now. Tennessee Cares, buckle up, state law. Ah, the Tennessee Welcome Center. I just stopped a few minutes ago, so I'm not going to bother to stop at the Tennessee Welcome Center. But I could if I wanted to. I'll just keep on driving in Nashville. But I like to keep my car clean. And I like that invisibility part that I was talking about. And I've crossed over the state line into Tennessee, and I'm still invisible. One of the things I've been working on a great deal over the last 5 years is how to understand, or better understand, my imaginative faculties, my imaginative intelligence, what it means to have an imaginative intelligence and then use it. So the road is a terrific place for the imaginative intelligence that I possess to activate itself. Now, it's counterintuitive in some ways, because when you hear the song of the road or the poems about the road, you always think of freedom. And I do too. I think of freedom and the road for sure. And yet when you pause for a minute and think about it, the road is a very confined place. I'm driving down the interstate. Over to my right, the Tennessee State Trooper has the blue lights on, flashing. He's pulled over a truck, an SUV. SUV probably was a little overconfident, speeding 90 miles an hour. So now, zippity-doo-dah, here we are, flash, 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 blue lights. State Trooper walks up to the window. May I see your license, sir? And, madam, may I see your license? Or, young lady, young man, may I see your license? I've been stopped before, so it's a nervous thing. So the road is a place of great organization, while at the same time, it's a place of freedom. I am passing a tree, evergreen, with another tree growing out of it that's deciduous. Somehow the trees have combined forces to grow together. And what does that mean? It doesn't necessarily have to have any meaning at all other than there it is on the road. There's a boredom out here as well. Some people say to me, you can never be bored because you always have something to do. And I think that might be true. And yet when boredom does seem to slip up on me, and I get a little sleepy out here on the road, I do things like record this radio show driving down the road. Now, I'm talking to you. This is a stream of consciousness. It's just a road trip. Cars are feathering into the highway right now, and I'm just driving along. Now, I am trying to stay connected to my stream of consciousness, to my improvisational nature. And yet the power of the highway, the pull of the road, the sound of the rhythm of the road lulls me. Maybe it's not as stimulating for my kaleidoscoping imaginative intelligence as I think it is. The road might be a limiting place. And yet I'm out here. And yet I'm drawn to it.
Car on shoulder reported ahead.
Waze is giving me my instructions. Car on shoulder reported ahead. Aha, there it is, on the other side of the road. But the car is on the shoulder. So last night, I was having a conversation with my good friend, Walter Parks. Walter wanted me to record a video, to just talk into the camera, a little bit like what I'm doing now. And I did, and it turned out very well. Now, Walter and I had a difference of opinion. He was encouraging me to make the video as good as I possibly can. It's got to be good, he said. And I agreed with it on one level. I like the idea of it's got to be good, because I do appreciate excellence. and striving for excellence. And I got in the weeds a little bit between excellence and good with Walter. And I felt like, and again, I'm speculating here, I felt like he might have been speaking from a more fixed point of view. You don't want to do anything unless it's going to be good. So attached to good is good enough, good for somebody. I've been a good boy. I've been a good girl. I am a good boy. I am a good girl. So good is one of those words that is a perfectly fine word. Oh my goodness. See, I used it just now. Goodness. Oh my goodness. Or, oh, that chocolate
Car
cake.
On shoulder reported ahead.
That chocolate cake tasted really, really good. Well, excellence also has great value. I was trying to explain to Walter how I felt more comfortable using the word excellence than I did using the word good. Although some people feel like excellence is even a more elevated word than good. But I was really trying to say to Walter, excellence is not a fixed point. Excellence is something that gives me a lot of freedom, or my sense of excellence gives me a lot of freedom, because it allows me to accept that I am moving in that direction and that I don't have to absolutely 100% measure everything I do against this ideal of good. Excellence is a bit more elevated than good, and yet it's not a fixed point in my mind. So that's what Walter and I were talking about. And of course, that leads into imaginative intelligence, which is a phrase, a name that Allegra Houston, my creative collaborator, and I have been tossing around for a few months. Allegra's writing a book about imaginative intelligence. So for me, imaginative intelligence, that ability we have to take images in, like the trailer behind that F-150 truck in front of me, pulling something wrapped in plastic, green straps around it. I have no idea what it is. It suspiciously looks like furniture. But as I move at 75 miles an hour past the trailer, and I stare more acutely, I can see that, yes, it is furniture. So my imaginative intelligence is taking that image in. Once it goes in, it stays there forever. It's part of my memory, which is where the past exists for me, and maybe for you as well. I wish that I had more access to the past, but I don't, except in my imagination. And so the road allows that to happen, and my imaginative intelligence rolls around. And I have to say that as I drive down the road trying to think of stream of consciousness and unpack these things logically, I'm having a bit of trouble with it. I can't think of anything really to say that's of significance for you. I'd like to be very important here. But really, I'm just a guy driving a car down the road headed back to my hometown, Asheville, North Carolina. And my mind drifts. And when my mind drifts over these green trees, big contrast between the green trees and the dry sage in Taos, New Mexico. I was longing to see these green trees because I was born around them. Some people say the trees talk to them. I don't know if the trees talk to me or not, but they do comfort me and give me a sense of place, a sense of holding, of nurturing, if you will. And for good reasons, the trees nurture the earth. The earth nurtures the trees absorb sunlight, photosynthesis, and they create this absolute abundance that I'm looking at right now. All of this creativity I'm surrounded with. I haven't seen a cow lately. I love to see cows in pastures. Trees are too thick to see the pastures. Oh, there's some corn in the field, but no cow. I'm comforted by the trees. And it takes a lot of wherewithal for me to stay with this line of thinking, this road report, if you will. I am interrupted by the rhythm of the road. A couple of months ago, I gave a friend a ride down to the Albuquerque airport from Taos. Her name is Sarah Gillespie. She's a terrific singer-songwriter based out of London. And Sarah and I hit it off a long time ago, and I've always...
Police reported ahead.
The police reported ahead, I've told. Well, I better be careful. Sarah and I hit it off a long time ago. As we were driving down to Albuquerque, she was telling me all about her musical career and production career in London, and she's doing very well. Very successful with her work. Singer, songwriter, cuts albums for other people, manages musicians. It's the music business. And she's doing very well with it. And as we were driving down the road, we were talking about Prufrock, the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, which is a poem that I've recited a few times on this show. And I remember it very well because I memorized it, been working with it for 13 years, maybe longer, and still don't really have it down. I don't like to have it down. I like to have it within me. So it does things to me. And memorization isn't about remembering the words. Memorization is about having a relationship with the piece that you're working on. So anyway, Sarah and I are driving down the road. She told me that she didn't drive. She's been on the road a lot, but she's always on the road in a bus or somebody's driving the car because she doesn't have a driver's license. I'm thinking, well, I've done nothing but drive all my life. I can feel the road. So we started to talk about Prufrock, and Prufrock's an interesting character because he's a spare man. And again, I've talked about the spare man thing before on this show, probably more than once. So if you've heard this rap, I hope you enjoy hearing it again. Prufrock is spare. And what that means is in the poem, he part of the society, the upper class British society, the posh people. So Sarah and I were talking about Prufrock, and as I said, Prufrock's in the posh society, upper crust, but he is irrelevant. He has no location in the society other than he goes to the parties, comes home after the parties, gets up, does it again. And in the whole time, he realizes after a while, during all this time, that he's irrelevant. It has no meaning. He's just there. Maybe nobody notices him. Maybe he is invisible like my Toyota. And so as I'm driving down to Albuquerque, I started to recite Prufrock for Sarah. And Sarah loved it. I love Prufrock. It's my motto. I don't want to be spare. I don't want to be spare like Prufrock. And, you know, lines in the poem, you know, Prufrock is lamenting as he's walking around town, showing his friend around town. Prufrock is lamenting his fate. He says, I've known the eyes already, known them all, the eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase. And when I'm formulated and sprawling on a pen, when I'm penned and wriggling on the wall, then how should I begin to spit out all the butt ends of my days and ways? How should I presume? So he's known these eyes. And when I hear that verse, I think I've had that experience too. The eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase. I love that. The eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase. So Sarah and I driving down the road on the Interstate 25 going south to Albuquerque. I'm on Interstate 24 now. So I'm one number shy headed south. Oh, by the way, Interstate 24, if it's an even number, that means that you're going east-west. If it's an odd number, you're going north-south. So 25 is going south to Albuquerque. 24 is going east to Nashville. So when I was with Sarah, I was on I-25, and now I'm on I-24. On I-25, we are just jabbering away about Prufrock and how much we were attempting to avoid the spareness that Proof Rock experienced. And what I pointed out to Sarah, I said, you know, we're all spare. We've all been outside looking in, and we've all been essential. And that's the beauty of it. Now, the problem with Proof Rock, poor old Proof Rock, he never felt essential, even maybe when he was. But in his mind, he was an attendant lord, one that will do to swell a progress, start a scene or two, advise the prince, no doubt an easy tool. The point is, he's saying, I am not Prince Hamlet. He's denying the possibility that he might be more than he is. And he takes great satisfaction in making that denial. So Sarah and I talked about that. And then I started to tell Sarah about how Proof Rock felt like he had no divinity, no sense of what God might be. And when I use the word God, I'm not much of a God on the throne person at all. In fact, I'm not a God on the person throne. I don't think God sits on a throne somewhere. If you think about it, God on the throne is a rather narrow human concept. I prefer to think of God, if you even want to call it that, as something more comprehensive. And so when we were driving down the road, I said, you know, I've been riding down these roads for years, and I've been doing shows, and I've been going here and going there. And the sound of the road, like right now, the sound of the road, mile marker 29 in Tennessee, exit 31 near New Hope Road, 249, 1 mile away, sound of the road. I said, Sarah, that's God. Sound you're hearing right now, the sound of freedom. Now, as I said earlier, the road's a rather confined place. So is it really a sound of freedom? It's certainly a sound of my car moving down the road, going somewhere, making a lot of noise. That may be all it is. And yet there's something about the rhythm of the wheels whirling round that might match the whirling of the earth. I don't know. So anyway, Sarah and I spent most of our time, 2.5 hours, talking about Proof Rock, being spare, music, rock and roll. I've never been a rock and roll musician at all. Never have been. And I always kind of wanted to be. I wanted to grow my hair long, have it flow over my shoulders. But I was bald when I was 28, so I had no hair to grow. And so I always felt a little diminished by that. So I shaved my head when I was around 35 or so, I guess. I don't remember exactly when, but once I shaved my head, I felt like, well, now that I have my head shaved, people will think I have hair. So the only way a person that's losing hair can actually have hair is to shave the head, and then people project hair onto it. And again, counterintuitive. So much of what we perceive is really inviting an opposite to show up. And so I dropped Sarah off at the airport, and we left with great enthusiasm. Now, a couple of days ago, she sent me an email, and she said she wanted to talk to me. And so I put her on Zoom. We started to talk to each other, and we caught up, and, oh, I'm doing great. I'm booking way ahead, et cetera, et cetera. So what she wanted to do on the Zoom call, she said, I'd like to come to Asheville in May and do a week-long workshop on songwriting and poetry. I'd like to do it at Lake Eden. And I said, well, if you can bring the people, we can make the workshop happen. And she might well be able to do that because she has a lot of global clients, all of whom want to work with her around songwriting. And of course, poetry and the poetic sensibilities of things will fit right into that. And I've had a lot of teaching experience, so it would be an interesting fit. But I told her, I said, well, instead of telling people you want to have a workshop at Lake Eden in Swannanoa, North Carolina, which is a great place. If you live in Western North Carolina and you've been out in that area, you may have been to the Leaf Festival, which is no longer at Lake Eden, but there's a new festival coming up in the fall called the Lake Eden Reunion and Book Launch. I'm part of that. It's a gathering of the tribe And I'm looking forward to continuing this sensibility of laboratory exploration around adult learning, especially in the creative realms. So Sarah wanted me to bring a workshop there, and I told her, well, we could do that, but maybe you should pitch it as a safari rather than a workshop. And what I mean by safari is, let's take a long trip to the Appalachian region of the Southern Highlands, where the Scottish runts roamed and the ghost of all the great fiddle players are wandering through the forest. You could make a really nice myth out of that.
I don't know if we'll pull that rabbit out of the hat, but I love the idea of doing that, which brings me around to an attitude that I've acquired in the last few weeks. My friend Lynn Rothman asked me if I had ever watched Ken Burns' country music series, docuseries, and I told her no. I had heard about it, thought it would be a good thing to watch, but I hadn't watched it, and she recommended that I watch it. So I went on to PBS, and I think I paid $4.98 a month or something to subscribe to it, and started watching it. Well, she warned me it's one of those things you can't stop watching. 18 hours worth of watching, in fact. So sure enough, I got on the screen and I started watching it. And as I was watching it, thinking about the conversations Sarah had and conversations Walter and I've had around music. Walter's a terrific singer-songwriter as well. I'm not. I sing off key. I'm like the poor dog that tries to harmonize with the coyotes, and all I do is sound like a muffled rug. But still, I have enthusiasm, like the dogs with the muffled rug voice. And I realize so much of my life has been similar to proof rock in the sense that I've tried to fit into the society of poets and the society of writers, the community of poets and writers. I've had a sense of how I'm supposed to interact, what I'm supposed to do, how I'm supposed to describe my enthusiasm for writing and for poetry. Buck up and say, I'm a poet. And as I was watching this Ken Burns show, I realized the only reason that I have my fingers, my heart really, dipped in the notion of expressing oneself with language isn't because I was called to be a poet, drawn to the poetics of things. I'm not like some of my friends who can't not write. I won't survive if I don't write, per se.
5.7 miles. Exit right to exit 43.
Tennessee 155, Riley Parkway. I'm headed into Nashville. If you didn't know by that note from Waves, I realized that the reason that I write poetry and have been involved in trying to fit into the poetry community and feeling like proof rock, I just don't quite get fit in. I'm a spare poet. Maybe not a spare man, but a spare poet. I've never had the same drive that a lot of my poet friends have. And not to say that I don't love poetry. It's been really, really good to me. It's been in my life all along. But I realized watching that Ken Burns show, it was not the poetry that drew me to the verse, to memorize the verse. It was my desire to sing. My desire to be part of that musical momentum that I was around all my childhood. When I was a boy, 4 years old, I would stand by the player piano and scream, "Oh, the wayward wind is a restless wind." And the player piano had paper rolls, and it was electric, so we didn't have to pump it. It was plugged into the wall. The piano played these old songs, and I would yell the songs out. So when I watched the Ken Burns show, I realized, I don't mind being a poet, but I'm not driven in the same way that a lot of my friends are. I don't envy them. I am driven to do what I'm doing right now.
watch the cars zip by. There's something really powerful about watching those cars zip by. And the guy that just went by, I'm going 76 miles an hour coming into Nashville, Tennessee. And his arm was hanging out of his SUV, and he goes by and he signals. He didn't flip me the bird, but he did this finger wiggle like I need to move over into the slow lane. Now the speed limit's 70 miles an hour through here, not 87. And so I'm 5 miles over, and yet this guy was very frustrated, and he felt like the need to signal to me that I was dawdling along, you know, accusing me of being a spare driver, perhaps. Now, I'm taking it personally. Oh, my gosh, not supposed to take these things personally, they say. And yet, I did. I thought, who are you, buddy, driving by? That's the road. That's the God I'm talking about. I'm 8 miles out of Nashville, Tennessee. In a couple of months, October the 3rd, I've been invited to come over to Nashville from Asheville and hear Carver play at the Bluebird Cafe. If you want to know Carver's music, you can go on to YouTube and...
In 1 mile, use the right lane to exit right. Then keep left to Tennessee 155 East, Riley Parkway, Opryland.
Opryland. How about that? I just talked about Ken Burns' country, and Opryland is the place where they still have the Grand Ole Opry. I'm going to drive right by it. How appropriate. Anyway, Carver is a Nashville person. She's going to be playing at the Bluebird Cafe. On
exit right to exit 43, Tennessee 155.
Oh, my goodness. Now you know where I am.
To Tennessee 155 East, Briley Parkway.
Opryland. All right, here we go. Briley Parkway. Meanwhile, in October, I'll be driving west on I-40 to come and see Carver, who will be at the Bluebird Cafe. Well, now, the reason this is important is because there's a big poetry thing going on in Asheville that same weekend.
Continue straight for 11.4 miles to exit 6A, I-40 East toward International Airport, Knoxville.
I have a chance to go to a big poetry gathering called the Hellbender Poetry Gathering. It's a Blue Ridge Assembly. And I haven't been invited yet, but I've been told that if I wanted to make an attempt, I could lobby for it, and I would get to come. And 100 poets or so all gathered doing very important work, and rightfully so. And I'll know probably a few people there that I will know. But, you know, I after watching the country music show, I'm going to go instead to the Bluebird Cafe to hear somebody play some country music. And I realized I'm not as much a poet as I thought I was. I'm more of an adventurer, perhaps an artist. I'm certainly a driver right now, watching the Black Crow fly above the highway and moving through Nashville, Tennessee. But I'm deciding to choose, or I'm choosing, to go to the Bluebird instead of to go be with the poets. So that tells me, in my heart of hearts, that what...
Car on shoulder reported ahead.
What stirs me up is something besides the verse. Now, I am still very interested in verse, and I use it all the time. It's integrated into me deeply, but I don't identify with it in the same way that a lot of people I know identify with it, which is fine. There's no problem with that. So the road...
Pothole reported ahead.
The road informs all of this, and that information adds a bit to the kaleidoscoping. And it's hot now, shifting out of music into reality of the moment. It's got the southern heat going on. It's August. And now, have you noticed when August comes around, there's a seeming shift in the air?
The trees have finished whatever they're going to do, and they're just waiting for the fall to come. The birds have finished their nests. The little ones have grown and are flying away, getting ready to migrate. There's a line of poetry, something told the wild geese it was time to go, though the fields lay golden, something whispered snow. So in September, August, September, you have that whisper of something coming, movement happening. And so I'm feeling a little bit of that southern heat right now. Not a storm in sight. It's Tornado Alley coming up through Oklahoma, out of New Mexico, and then crossing over to Illinois, and then continuing on to St. Louis. And now it's also a little bit of Tornado Alley coming down from St. Louis to Nashville. But I missed it all. So the summer heat is now on me, and I have now made my turn. And I am on I-40, just like that. Boom, magic, through, all the way to I-40. And as I'm moving toward Asheville, my hometown, I'm feeling complete. I'm headed home. Robert Frost said, home is where when you go, they have to let you in. I think there might be some truth to that, although when I go to Asheville and go to Lake Eden, I'm expected, so I'll be let in, no question about it. And so the idea that I'm going to finish exploring right now with you as we move toward the top of the hour, the idea is to allow your built-in indigenous imaginative intelligence to inform the way you feel at home with yourself. So often, returning home is a theme I hear people mentioning. And home is not so much a place as it is a state of mind, maybe a person. Maybe you are in a complete faraway land and you are with somebody that you feel comfortable with and you feel at home. I can feel at home anywhere in the world, some people might say. I think maybe sometimes that's a solo thing. Maybe people are so self-contained that they simply feel at home. At the same time, home is a place where the people gather. So that's what's happening with me right now. I'm headed back to Western North Carolina, going home, and before I go home, which is about 250 more miles or 300 more miles before I get there, I will tell you that last night, Walter Parks and I filmed me talking for 6 minutes about the ideas I have around our responsibilities as people. And if you're a creative person, your responsibility is a creative leader. And I've said this before on the show, I'll say it again. If you've heard it, you'll probably like hearing it again. That my job and your job is to just go to the lake and make the first ripple, let the lake take care of the rest. And so Walter shot this video. I put on a black shirt, sat in front of a black screen, so the only thing there is my head. I look like something out of an old Star Trek movie. It's a bit homemade looking. It looks like maybe a 1930s movie or something. And I just talked for 6 minutes and listened to it. Felt like I'd said something meaningful. And Walter and I were talking about how to make something good. And I told Walt, you know, good's fine. But I like the idea of the process towards excellence, which means good will pop out along the way, and so will all the other bits of story and tidbits that come with the creative process. And excellence, maybe excellence is not the measure, as I said earlier in this show, but excellence is just something that makes me feel good because I know I'll never achieve it, but I will reach towards it. So reach toward the stars. My purpose holds to sail beyond the sunset in the baths of all the western stars until I die. So I am out here on the road. Exit 221B, Old Hickory Boulevard, next right. Some brake lights pop up. Tennessee tags on the cars. Hot summer day. Ordinary, August. And in the spirit of being alive, there's something about the rhythm of the road. It's there, it flows, it moves me along. And the wisdom of its own longing, the clouds in the east fluff up above the trees, and the blue sky, egg blue, almost smoky. The ABF truck, you can unpack. It says unpack.com. I don't know what that means, but we've been unpacking. Glow all out in Pigeon Forge, so says the Dollywood sign. Knoxville, Tennessee, 169 miles east of here. And the state law says hands-free devices only.
And that was the last thing I said before I turned off the recorder as I was driving east out of Nashville, Tennessee. I continued on for the rest of the afternoon. A little rain along the way. I got very sleepy, but I pushed on because I was trying to get to Candler, which is where Inca High School is located, and my niece Anna works there, and she was finishing her work schedule at 5 o'clock, and I had to go there to pick up a brand new computer. I had just ordered a new MacBook Air 15-inch. The one that I'm using right now to record this is almost worn out. I've had it 5 years. And the keyboard's starting to show a bit of wear. The letters are gone because I use it so much. So I decided to take the leap and get myself a new, almost new, a refurbished MacBook Air. If you are shopping for computers and you're in the category of Apple, the prices have gone up. You can still get the refurbished ones. This one that I ordered was released this past March, so it's not that old, and the price was a little lower. So I was pleased to get it. So it's sitting on my desk right now. And as soon as I finish working on this show for you and closing this show out, I'm going to switch over to set up the new MacBook Air. It's black, so it'll be easy to spot on the table, especially on a white table. I'm looking forward to it. I've gone through many Apple computers over the years, and I've stayed with the brand. I did use a PC once and found it to be a bit cumbersome for me, which would probably be the same case if I were used to a PC and switched over to an Apple. So for me, I'm comfortable with the keyboard, I'm comfortable with the screen, and I like the brand, always have, so why not stick with it? So as I'm concluding this time with you, I'm now looking out the window where my desk is at Mountain Stream at Lake Eden. It's summertime here in western North Carolina. The contrast between the summer mornings in Taos, New Mexico, and the summer mornings here, quite different. One, I'm surrounded by trees here. In Taos, you have wide open spaces. Now, people who grow up in northern New Mexico, the Taos area, will say when they come east, they feel a sense of claustrophobia because you can only see 50, 60 feet before you have forests. There's no great horizon here. It's all green. And so the people come from New Mexico to Asheville and they feel a little claustrophobic. The people who grew up in western North Carolina, like I grew up in western North Carolina, surrounded by these trees, when they get out west, they're not quite sure what to do with the vistas, the long 80-mile views and the dramatic sunsets. I am accustomed to both. I do enjoy the vistas of Taos. I like looking out over the mesa and seeing the bright red sunsets or the sunrise or watching the birds fly or listening to the coyotes. There are coyotes here in Western North Carolina. That said, out in northern New Mexico, there are a lot of coyotes out there, and they howl and howl and howl at night. Sounds like some fantastic country song that played out on the Ken Burns docuseries about country music. Although country music is often seen as Nashville music, it's actually not Nashville music. Anything that's played in America that rose out of the soil and the people of America, wherever it rose from, could really be considered country music, because it's all about the country we live in. This country that seems so disruptive right now, and indeed seems, maybe not seems, it absolutely is. And yet, driving across yesterday, recording the show that I recorded, which you've just listened to, you've just heard, I didn't notice any disruption at all. I noticed complete civility. I stopped at a huge truck stop, packed with people, all kinds of curios, little cats with shiny eyes and turtles and flags and banners and who knows what else. All kinds of barbecue and lots of food to buy, and people were just milling about like crazy. Hundreds and hundreds, it seemed like hundreds, probably 100 bays for buying gas, no joke. Complete civility, no disruption at all. So in this country that we're living in right now, with its disruption, which we don't actually see, I drove across the country and didn't feel it at all, although I am acutely aware of something going on. And I'll bet you the singer-songwriters feel the same way. The poets do. Am I a poet? I certainly can write poetry, so I do feel this. So the verse, the songs, the philosophy, the reflections that will rise up from this Americana experience that we're having right now will become part of the body of work, the grand body of work that contains Americana, the sensibilities of Americana. If you wanted to go global with this, all music is country music, because the music rises from the people. No matter where you are in the world, you can hear people playing music, playing on different instruments, singing songs in different languages, praising the situations that are around them, or protesting against the situations that are around them. The poets sometimes have a little bit better shot at getting the words out, because they can be a little more under the radar. If you make a song and you sing it out loud on the stages or on the street corners, the public hears it. You can write a poem, and as soon as you write the poem down on a little scratch piece of paper, or you can maybe sit down and do 100 copies of the poem yourself, pass them out, it has a different kind of effect. But it all has the same effect. It's that ripple in the lake business. Put the ripple in the lake and see where it goes. So I am here getting ready to begin my movement into the Western North Carolina experience, the Buncombe County experience, the Asheville experience, the Lake Eden experience. I'm helping Jennifer Pickering and her group plan the Lake Eden reunion and book launch. I did help Jennifer write the book. My name appears on the front of it. It's a 330-page book with color print, color paintings, color pictures inside. And it's a 30-year history of the Leaf Festival right here at Lake Eden on these beautiful grounds. And it's all tied to the sensibilities of Black Mountain College. And Black Mountain College was that experimental college that existed on this property from, I think, 1937, 38 until 1957 or 58. And the people who came and taught were quite progressive. And I use progressive not in the sense of progressive as politically progressive, although I'm sure many of them were. Many of them were considered liberals. They were liberté, free. Let your learning be free. Spread your wings. Don't try to control it. Ignore the status quo. Break through. All of that was part of the Black Mountain experience. This book that Jennifer and I wrote, it's inspired by that. And we're hoping that here at Lake Eden, just like on the road trip I took and recorded, something comes out of it that's tied to the sensibilities of the laboratory mindsets that the students had all those years ago and that we still to this day have. And wherever you are listening to this, I hope you have that too, because it's something that's delightful. It's educational. It's experimental. It's a little magical because you're not quite sure where all of it's coming from. Imaginative intelligence slides in and makes its appearance, recites a few lines of verse, and goes back out the door again to return later. So on that note, I'd like to say thank you ever so much for listening to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. Thank you, Devine Dial, for managing WPVM-FM in Asheville. Robin Collier, Mike Tilley, thank you for doing the same. KCEI-FM, Cultural Energy Radio in Taos, New Mexico. Walter Parks, thank you for our theme song. WalterParks.com. For more on Walter's music, you can reach me, Nave@JamesNave.com. Nave is spelled N-A-V-E. Always welcome an email. Would love to hear from you. If you're interested in being a writer, or if you are a writer and you're interested in having a little bit of fun, my creative collaborator, Allegra Houston, and I do a regular Saturday gathering, the Imaginative Storm Writing Gathering and Salon. We write for 10 minutes, talk for an hour, engage, read, philosophize a bit. It's a little bit like sitting on the porch in the morning with a cup of coffee, talking to some close friends. ImaginativeStorm.com is where you can go to find out more about that. And I believe that pretty much covers it. The road trip is over. My rear end is in the chair, and I've got other things to do today. But for now, I'm going to sign off and say thank you ever so much for listening. And I do hope you come back sometime soon. And until then, I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
Hello, this is David Rogers. I'm the host of the Magic Music Mix Radio Show, heard on WPVM on Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Each week I play a mix of classic oldies music, playing more than the 50 to 75 songs typically heard on most oldies radio stations. If you're looking for a live radio, playing a great mix of oldies, join us here on WPVM, the voice of Asheville, Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. We're real people playing real music.